Welcome to Supernatural Podcast episode number 34 for Playthings, which originally aired in the US on January 18, 2006. First, a bit of news from Dawn Ostroff, president of the CW. She says, I would like to announce today that Veronica Mars, Supernatural, One Tree Hill, and Everybody Hates Chris will be streamed for free immediately after the episodes air. And about Supernatural, she said, Supernatural's holding up very well. That is the toughest time slot on television. Last night was very, very strong numbers, and creatively, the show is absolutely at its best. As you might have heard, Everybody Hates Chris has been picked up for the next season, but no news yet on the other CW shows. You can read the entire article at E! Online at Kristen's blog dated January 19. I'll put the link in the show notes. Let's jump into the recap. I didn't have time to recap it myself, so this is from TV.com. At the Pierpoint Inn in Connecticut, the owner, Susan Thompson, is closing and preparing to move. Now I was really amused that the inn was in Connecticut, just like Lorelai Gilmore's Dragonfly Inn, which is in Connecticut, on Gilmore Girls. But anyway, I digress. Anyhow, her two daughters, Tyler and Maggie, Anne complains about the move. The daughter, Tyler, goes up and puts her dolls away, but notices that one has had its head twisted around. She hears a scream and goes to see that the mover has fallen down the stairs. His head is twisted around and an antique doll is lying next to him. So it cuts to Peoria, Illinois, and Sam is trying to track down the missing Ava with Ellen's help. She hasn't had much luck but reports two mysterious deaths at a hotel. Sam wants to investigate to save who they can and go to the hotel. As they go in, Sam notices a hoodoo mark on an urn. They get a room then go to check things while noticing more hoodoo marks. They talk to Susan and notice she has a number of antique dolls. She also has a dollhouse, which is an identical replica of the hotel. It's pretty cool. Sam notices the doll with the twisted head, and Tyler comes in and mentions their grandma, Rose. Susan refuses to let them talk to her, saying she's ill. While Sam and Dean split up to check out the hotel, the buyer's agent talks to Susan and reveals that they plan on demolishing the hotel. Tyler is playing with the dolls, and there's a doll sitting in a room just like the agent is. In his room, the agent sits on his bed as the door behind him opens. Tyler turns to see the doll hanging by its neck, while the agent is hung in the same manner. Dean finds out about the death and goes back to the room where he finds Sam drunk. Sam is depressed over the fact that he couldn't save the agent or Ava and change his destiny. He asks Dean to kill him if he turns evil and says John was right to ask Dean to do it. When Sam pushes Dean reluctantly agrees to do it if he has to, then puts Sam to bed. He goes downstairs to the bar where he talks to the elderly bellman, Sherwin. He talks about the hotel's history and how it was once the Thompson family estate. Sherwin says Rose isn't thrilled to be leaving but doesn't want to discuss her illness. In one of the photos, Rose's nanny Marie has a necklace with the hoodoo mark. The next morning, Sam wakes up with a massive hangover and claims he doesn't remember much of Dean's promise the other night. After Dean briefs Sam on the situation, they go up to the attic to talk to Grandma Rose. They find her in a wheelchair and she suffered from a stroke. Hoodoo requires hands-on ceremony, so they figure someone else is involved. Susan finds them intruding and demands that they leave. She then talks to Tyler, who is playing with Maggie, and when the daughter says that Maggie insists they can't leave, Susan says Maggie is Tyler's imaginary friend. As she leaves, Maggie says she doesn't like Susan. Susan is loading up the car as a swing stirs into motion nearby, as the swing in the dollhouse moves as well. Susan notices, as all the playground equipment starts to move, a car comes to life on its own and tries to run her down, but Sam intervenes and saves the day. The brothers believe a spirit is responsible and determine Rose had a stroke just before the killing started, and she was the one who was working to suppress an evil spirit. They mention Tyler's sister, and then Susan says she doesn't have one. They realize something's up. Maggie's up in the attic confronting a helpless Rose when Tyler comes in. They go off to play, and Maggie assures Tyler that they will be able to play forever. Susan, Dean, and Sam go upstairs, where they find the antique dolls destroyed and Tyler gone. Susan reveals Rose had a sister named Margaret who drowned in a pool when she was young. Tyler and Maggie are leaning over the balcony above the pool, and Maggie encourages Tyler to jump, and then they can be together forever. Sam, Dean, and Susan get there and find the door locked, and Maggie throws Tyler into the pool where she starts to drown. Sam uses the urn marked with the hoodoo mark to break the supernaturally sealed doors while Maggie holds Tyler down. But a voice calls out Margaret's name and she disappears, and Sam jumps into the pool and manages to get Tyler out just in time. Upstairs, Rose confronts Maggie's spirit, and Maggie agrees to let them go if Rose does something for her. Maggie can't understand why Rose kept her away, thinking she didn't love her. Maggie accepts Rose's offer and approaches her. Susan goes to get Rose and screams. Dean and Sam go up to find Rose dead. Later, Susan is taken away by the paramedics, and Tyler assures them she can't see Maggie. The brothers don't know what happened, but help Susan and Tyler leave. Sam agrees with Dean that it's good to be back in action, but holds Dean to his promise to take care of him if he turns evil. As they leave and the police clear out the hotel, the spirits of two girls can be seen in the attic playing together, Rose and Maggie. That's it for the recap. Let's move on to the discussion. Hi, I'm Ellen.
And I'm Josh.
So what did you think of the episode?
As with most Supernatural episodes, I did enjoy it. I have to say, though, I was a little let down that the Ava situation was just kind of mentioned at the beginning, and I understand they have to fill a whole season, so they can't get everything in the arc done right away, but it just made this episode feel a little bit like filler.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I didn't even think of it that way until after the episode, and I looked back and said, what happened to Ava? They didn't really talk about that. For me, I was glad to see that it was a baddie of the week again and kind of followed the regular formula. Where was the scariness? There was absolutely not a hint of scariness in this episode.
Well, I think they were going for more of a subtle creepiness in this episode rather than, you know, the usual big scares that we get. And I guess that's scary to some people. You know, to me it was, you know, like you said, a little less than usually. A little less scary than usual.
Well, let's move on to what we liked, and then we'll keep going with the dislikes.
But right.
And you're right about that. It was kind of the creepiness. It was sort of a nod to Hitchcock and right. Psycho and The Birds, Vertigo, stuff like that, which was, they didn't give you all, you know, they just alluded to it. And I think especially the scene where you see Rose, the grandmother, in the chair with the face to the window. That was so set up just like Psycho.
Yeah, and it was kind of reminiscent of the episode where they thought that woman in the old folks home or in the hospital, I guess, was evil. You know, because she was turned facing the wall as well, you know. It reminded me of that. But yeah, like you said, I think that this episode had a lot of references to Hitchcock and a lot of references to Stephen King, of course, and The Shining and that situation, which is, you know, for a fan of those type of movies, it's kind of neat to see.
Yeah, I love that. And they talk about The Shining a lot, but right. I thought there might be some more of the scares like you saw in The Shining that weren't here. So it was more Hitchcock meets Stephen King than
right.
straight into the scary side.
That's true. The Shining is a lot more intense scares, I guess.
It followed the formula of Dead in the Water. And with the kid, of course, I mean, of course, that's going to make it seem like Dead in the Water right up there. But they kind of had the same types of characters and how they were all interrelated, although on a much smaller scale. And I thought that was kind of neat that they brought that up again and that it was different types of characters again that we saw. And it was cleverly done, I thought, even for a recycled formula.
I think that it was well done that way. And I think the other big thing that made it stand out was it seemed to me that there was a lot of humor in this episode, especially compared to the rest of the season. And it seemed also that there was possibly intentional references to what people talk about in the fan world.
I know. I loved it. Where Dean says, I just figured after Ava, there'd be more angst, more droopy music, and staring out the rainy windows.
Exactly. That had to be a reference of what people post about online.
Sam and his angst. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
There was reference to how so many people assume that they're gay, which is also a big thing in the fan world. It is also funny how they mentioned each other's heights at different points, because that's also something that's also talked about a lot. Like when Sam calls him bossy and short, and Dean refers to Sam as Sasquatch.
Oh, I love that, yeah. That's true. The other part that I just loved was when they were talking about the antique dolls, so they can get in and look at the room.
Right.
And Dean makes this big deal out of how Sam loves antique dolls, and he loves to dress them up and play with them. And Dean is just, or Sam's giving Dean the death look.
Right.
But he just plays along.
Right, because they have to get in there. I love how Dean takes advantage of making Sam uncomfortable like that. Like in the clown episode where he stole the chair, so he'd have to sit in the clown chair.
Yeah, it's much more reminiscent of early first season,
right.
Which is great. I think that's really neat that they're bringing that back.
I also liked I liked the idea of the dolls being involved. They didn't turn out to be, you know, evil dolls or anything, but I've always thought that dolls were kind of creepy to begin with, so.
Oh, me too. I never liked them. And I went when I was back in college, my mother had a doll collection from when she was a little kid. And so they were all antique, scary, old-looking ones. And they were all sitting up on the dresser in my old bedroom that they had made into a guest room. And when I
Oh.
would stay there home on holiday, I would have to look at those dolls, and they creeped me out.
They are creepy.
All those eyes.
Right, exactly, that never blink. Well, I was always a scaredy cat as a kid, but my little brother was kind of like the one that wasn't fazed by anything, but he was always terrified of the doll that sat up in the top of our closet. And I had to make sure that this doll had the door was closed every night so it couldn't get out and get him.
We all have our little weird fears.
I think the other thing that I liked, and it was kind of brief, but was Dean admitting that it was wrong of John to say that stuff to him, about Sam and give him that kind of pressure. And the kind of pressure that John had put on both of his sons to begin with and that kind of lifestyle. But it just seemed to me like it's, Dean growing up and moving out of his father's shadow and realizing that his dad did a lot of things wrong.
Yeah, they're finally grown up enough to realize that dad wasn't perfect.
It's a realization that he and Sam need to find their own way and their own way of doing things as opposed to just following in dad's footsteps.
As far as the don't likes, there was a continuity issue that just drove me crazy. And I try not to focus on these, but this one just jumped out and bit me. When Sam was having his hangover the next morning in the toilet, we
Yes.
see him reflected in the mirror as he's talking to Dean. But then Dean
Right.
walks past the mirror towards the bathroom, and we see the flipped image of Sam. But it doesn't make sense because now his cast is on the left hand instead of the right hand. And I kept going, did they put his cast on the wrong hand? And then I realized it was a mirror image. But all I could do was stare at, I mean, I'm going to have to go back and see that scene again because I missed the whole scene. I was just staring at the cast. Like, how did they put the cast on the wrong hand? That says a real cast. It's not a prop. I felt kind of stupid when I realized it was a mirror image, but that was really distracting.
I agree. I didn't even, notice as much as you did. All I noticed is that the blocking seemed really weird in that scene.
Yes.
I couldn't understand where the camera was and where they were in relation to each other.
And the dialogue, what I did manage to catch, seemed really sort of out of sync with what they were doing.
I don't know. The whole drunk Sam thing, was a little. I'm on the fence about that myself. I think it was a funny situation. I'm not so sure that it was believable as a performance.
But you'd think Dean would have tried to figure out something to say to Sam that wasn't a promise until Sam was thinking properly again.
Right.
I mean, you could tell Dean was trying to think really hard, but he just got trapped. Now he's probably kicking himself. Yeah, that scene just didn't play out very well.
Well, what did you think? Did I have to ask you this question? When Dean first walked in and Sam said, "You're bossy and you're short," did you think drunk immediately?
No.
Did you understand that that was going on? Because I'm asking you because I did. I was like, "What in the world? Is he like possessed by the little girl or something?"
Yeah, I was like, what is going on here? Because I didn't catch it. I mean, if he had like a bottle on a table or. Yeah, I mean, my other big point on this one was just that when they talked about a haunted hotel, I expected The Shining, I expected scary. And I like what they did with it. Really didn't live up to my expectations.
There was like a little bit of holes that could have been filled in. Like, for me, I would want to know why Grandma Rose was using hoodoo or voodoo to keep her dead sister away. I mean, was this like, was she a murderous spirit for all of these years? Or she just thought it was creepy to have her dead sister hanging around? Or what was it that started her trying to keep her away in the first place?
Yeah, and did the little girl actually cause the stroke? I mean, it may have just been, okay, she was old and had a stroke, but it may have been caused by the little girl as well. We don't know.
Right. We don't know, and we don't know, what relationship they had and or why her grandma didn't do anything to put her spirit to rest all this time or anything.
Or what about any of the other family members? I mean, why they didn't suspect something, but the granddaughter did? They didn't really go into any of that at all.
Nope, and I didn't know if it was supposed to be a twist that she was imaginary or not. Like, because it seemed to me kind of obvious that she wasn't real from the first time the mother interacts with the kids. I'm not sure if that's what the writers were going for.
I think they had the vision of the two kids from The Shining and wanted to do something with it, and this is
Right.
what they came up with. Because you see them at the when one of the first images are the two girls sitting on the balcony with their legs folded over the side,
Right.
against the railing, and it looked like the two girls from The Shining standing in the hallway, only they were sitting, so, and they were dressed alike, and yeah, it was, you could tell that that's what they were going after. They didn't look like sisters either, really.
No, they didn't. One of them looked kind of like a young Natasha Lyonne.
Yeah, and then that scene at the end with the swimming pool, what girl would possibly jump off there?
I
I mean, really.
don't
Like, when I was a kid, I read this book. It was this little ghost story called Wait Till Helen Comes, and it was for kids. I mean, about this ghost who haunts this girl and then leads her into a pond to drown her. But that
know.
was like where she's walking into the pond, and it seemed like, she was going swimming, something, This little girl
Right.
jumping off a balcony into a swimming
Right.
pool?
That has a cover on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That just didn't seem at all realistic. Like a drowning or an accidental death or something like that. I could see that maybe.
That was weird. And I have to admit, they did, which was crazy, but it did. I was worried for a minute that she was going to be dead. Just because of the whole situation with Sam, trying to save everybody and whatever. And what would happen if, he didn't save her?
Yeah.
So I thought they might be going with that angle. But I was relieved when she wasn't dead because, like you said, angst and foggy mirror or windows and all of that.
Yeah, it was good to see him have that sort of victory for himself.
Right.
Back in the saddle again, as they put it. Any speculation or questions you might have?
Well, I wonder, last episode we had a lot about, the big secret and what about Sam going evil and all that stuff. And it seemed like we rehashed a lot of that this episode. So it makes me wonder if this is like foreshadowing where Sam is going to go all Dark Willow at the end of the season and Dean's going to have to do something about it, And he's going to be put in a position where he has to live up to his promise or find some way around it.
Will that be this season or next season? It's hard to tell.
Right. Good question.
I mean, it might be that they'll still just be setting up the war by the end of this season. I hope we find out some big things about the ceiling demon, though, because we really haven't heard much about him the whole season so far, and we're halfway through.
Right.
They gotta give us something.
Oh,
But apparently, there are some really big things going on the next few episodes, or maybe a few more down the line. And since I don't read spoilers, I haven't looked at them, but
right.
apparently, there are some big, shocking things up the road.
Well, I look forward to it.
Me too. I came across a theory on the special kids from Autumn's Fire. She's on LiveJournal in one of the communities I read. And she says, what if his plans for Sammy and all the kids like him are to use them until he's done and then toss them away? The first one, Max, he's dead because he achieved his goal. He killed his family for some reason we might find out later, and brought Sam closer to finding out about his powers. Andy's brother is dead because his job was to inform Andy about the demon and basically destroy his life to allow the demon to get to him. Andy's job isn't over yet, so he's still alive. And while the girl he was interested in is alive, she won't go near him, so she's out of the picture.
Right.
Ava's alive, but we think in the clutches of the demon, perhaps, because her job is half done. She was given the visions to save Sam and then grabbed by the demon. She might be back. And Sam's job isn't known yet. And with Dean as the unknown factor, the demon's not even sure Sam can complete it. Hence the test that he gives him, like a nightmare in Croatoan. The demon
All
is just
right.
using the kids and then killing them or getting them killed when he's done with them. We don't know what he ultimately wants Sam for or what he needs Sam to do before he tosses him away as well.
Sounds like an interesting theory.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of different from some of the others I've read and not something I'd thought about. But Jo Rowling does the same thing in the Harry Potter series. When she's
Oh,
done with a
right.
character, she kills them off. So maybe this is the same kind of thing. Maybe they're using that formula.
Well, that's very interesting because, along this line, you just assume that the kid's death is actually foiling the demon's plan, but what if in reality it's actually furthering his plan?
Exactly. I had never even thought of that angle. That's really kind of interesting.
And hopefully we'll find out its validity sometime soon. And I think it's good that they don't, ignore things. Well, the Ava thing was a little bit of a quick explanation of why they're moving on. They haven't found her for a month. At least they didn't just ignore it,
And they gave us a time frame of how long it's been since the last episode.
Right, which is
So,
unusual.
yes, that's very unusual. And this time they were in Connecticut. They've never been to Connecticut before.
All
So
right.
branching beyond the
All
Midwest.
right. Trying to get all 50 states eventually.
Yeah, when are they going to New Jersey and deal with the Hell's Gates down there? I want him to go back to the urban legends again. I'm waiting on one of those.
Yeah, you're right. It's been a while.
So what about your favorite quote?
My favorite quote in this episode, well, there was a bunch of good ones. I like the quotes about the Sasquatch, and I liked the bellhop dragging the bag up the
Oh, that
stairs.
was great. I half expected a gun to go off or something.
Right. See, that was just unexpected weirdness that I enjoy. And I did like it when she called them insane and Dean's all, "It's been said."
I loved the one about how Dean was so excited to work a job like this because it's an old school haunted house, secret passageways, sissy British accents, and that they might
Yes.
even run into Fred and Daphne, and he goes, Daphne. Oh, one of my other favorite quotes, I mean, there were so many of them, this one, was when they went up to see Rose to see whether she's the one doing hoodoo, and
Oh,
Sam says, yeah,
yes.
what do you want to do, poke her with a stick?
Right.
And Dean nods, he's like, no, you can't poke her with a stick.
That would be great. I can see that
I
happening
know,
too.
Dean the little kid, he never grows up.
Lusting after cartoon characters and poking old ladies with sticks.
But when you have these standalones, they don't have as much content. That's just the way they're designed. Okay, let's move on to the legends and references. There were just a couple of references in this episode. The first is hoodoo. Once again, they brought this up. This time, hoodoo symbols were on vases and so forth around the inn. The symbol is the quincunx, the arrangement of 5 units in the pattern corresponding to 5 spots on dice, playing cards, or dominoes. It is often used in hoodoo as a sort of artificial crossroad and can be created inside a room in the house. It's also called a 5-spot and generally used for scaling and fixing spells in place. Next were poppets. It's a doll used in European witchcraft made to represent a person for casting healing, fertility, or binding spells on the person. These dolls can be made from carved root, grain, or corn chaffs, a fruit, paper wax, a potato, clay, branches, or cloth stuffed herbs. Whatever actions are performed upon the poppet are then transferred to the person. These dolls are often mistakenly called voodoo dolls, but voodoo dolls are unheard of in original voodoo in Haiti, although some are used in New Orleans, mostly to amuse tourists. Apparently, the term voodoo doll was invented by an American writer who made up a story about voodoo after hearing that it was witchcraft. The only dolls used in voodoo are ones used on voodoo altars, which are supposedly to represent Iowa, the spirits of voodoo. And this is a short little article called The Shining 2 by Greg. With the recent episode of Supernatural, I felt that it had mirrored Stephen King's 1977 novel and Stanley Kubrick's 1980 film adaptation in several strange ways. One, the whole setting. I thought the whole old creepy hotel inn where it was set was basis enough for several Shining tie-ins. Also, the room where Sam and Dean are staying, room 237, was the most paranormally active room in the Overlook Hotel, the setting of The Shining. Number 2, the bar scene. About halfway into the episode, Dean sits up at the hotel bar and has a conversation with the bartender, Butler, which also mirrors a scene from The Shining where Jack has a conversation with a ghost bartender about his family. I would go into detail about their conversation, but this is a clean podcast, and that type of language would be prohibited. Number 3, the little girl. In the episode, Maggie says, "We can have tea parties forever and ever and ever," which is somewhat of a famous line from The Shining, where the spirits of 2 dead little girls ask Danny, Jack's son, if they can come play with them, Danny, forever and ever and ever. Number 4, not a Shining reference. Also in Hunted, Dean says that they may even run into Fred and Daphne, which is a reference to the Scooby-Doo series. There have been several references to The Shining in Season 2, but this was the first episode where there have been some near-direct and exact scenes that imitated. I seriously think the writers should start watching different horror movies because it seems it's all they have on them. So let's move on to the articles and editorial section. This is Welcome to the Dollhouse, Innocence and Supernatural's Playthings by Krista. In this episode, as well as in Supernatural on the whole, children are the eyes through which the greatest terror is seen. We meet a cute little girl sitting on a huge staircase. When her mother passes by, telling her that her toys are about to be packed up and taken away from her, the little girl mimics the girl next to her, replying, "Son of a bitch." Moments later, we see the same mover who was threatening these symbols of childhood tossed down the stairs, his head rotated on his neck. Tyler, the little girl, is told by her mother not to look, not to see the horrible accident, but you can tell that it's beginning to make a mark on Tyler. The scene intimates that childhood itself is an inherently corruptive process, that growing up means giving up imaginary friends and the ability to play make-believe. And the ghost Maggie is that line between innocence and corruption, her death somehow making her able to do both violence and desperately crave a world of eternal sanctuary and friendship. But in Playthings, even the adults are a bit frozen in time. Sherwin, an old man hanging on to history and memories, is working what in most places would be a young man's job. Dean finds a way to reconnect with something of his jovial nature, joking and teasing throughout the episode. Grandma Rose is literally frozen in the house. The people who are safe are those who don't change. Sam plays at a kind of regression in the episode, when he reaches for the bottle for relief and from all his mental trauma. Dean returns to the hotel room and finds his brother openly teasing him, detached a bit from his firm grip on reality. His mood shifts quickly and he's pleading like a little boy for Dean to promise to end his life if the monstrous and murderous destiny given to him comes to pass. Dean finds himself able to make the promise but definitely tries to whitewash the fact, though we feel at the same time that he would hold himself to it. When Sherwin, the bellman, mentions the pain that comes with losing the hotel, asking Dean to imagine losing his own home, he replies offhandedly, "I don't know, I never really knew one." We're re-impressed with the notion that our heroes have never really had that some sense of basic building blocks of innocence, one of which is the security that comes with a home. That loss has been such a part of their lives that they aren't really capable of grasping its weight. At the same time, we have to realize that what Sam and Dean deal with every day is exactly what 99% of children grow up to learn doesn't exist outside of books. In some ways, this is how they're so able to connect with the children in this episode and others. They have that touchstone of innocence. And tragically, when they do have to interact with kids, it ends up that the true innocence is to be able to believe that the supernatural world is imaginary. Knowing what they know, the mundane, becomes fantasy. As the camera pushes into the hotel one last time, the two ghost girls playing together is just as creepy as it is satisfying. They get to be together, but what if remains? And they play out in more than just this episode, continuing to build one of this season's most clear themes. How far is too far to go in order to stay together with someone you love? Thanks for the articles, everyone. There weren't any songs in this episode that I could come across, and I looked around online to see if I just missed something, but I don't think anyone else found any either. Bummer. Tonight's song of the night is Mystery by Waiting on One. Enjoy.
She's a mystery to me, and everything about you. It's hard to believe that I haven't met you. It's difficult to say when all will come true, but until then, I will begin. I'll pray for you. She's out there in the middle of nowhere, but someday I'll find just where nowhere is. A past will. Pass with the light. Oh.
Okay, guys, that's it for this episode. Join us again next week after another all-new episode. Take care. Thank you for listening to the Supernatural Podcast. You can visit my website at supernaturalpodcast.blogspot.com or send me an email at supernaturalpodcast@gmail.com. Please note that the opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and not of the producers of Supernatural or the CW. Audio clips played on this podcast are property of the CW and no infringement is intended. Some of the music heard here is from the Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.